Support for The Full Story comes from Long Wharf Theater, creating theater of, for, and by the people of Greater New Haven. Everyone's story has a place at Long Wharf. You belong.
It's every parent's nightmare. And sadly, it's a nightmare that more and more are experiencing. And the question is, why? Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak, and I know this isn't a subject that many want to talk about, because for some, it simply hits too close to home. For others, talking about mental health and depression and family matters is just so difficult. They'll do anything to avoid it. But we're not going to do that today. We're not going to avoid. We're going to talk about it because the suicide rate for young people across the nation is up, and it's up in our region. And again, the question is, why? We have a number of guests to speak with us today, and we're going to bring in Gillian Anderson. And before we start, I need to mention that Gillian is the former director of development for WSHU, and Gillian and I worked many, many years ago together at Connecticut Public TV. Gillian, it's good to see you.
Thank you, Ron. It's so good to see you as well.
Gillian is now the head of a peer-to-peer organization, which is called My Friend Abby. Gillian, who is Abby?
Well, thank you for covering this very important topic. I really do appreciate it. It's near and dear to my heart. Abby was my daughter. Abby was my beautiful, outgoing, courageous, funny 15-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. And she died by suicide 5 years ago as a sophomore in high school.
And I want to mention that you are an area resident. You've been in Connecticut for a number of years, and there have been newspaper reports about what you have done since Abby took her life. And as you mentioned, that was about 5 years ago. What are you doing nowadays?
Well, for the last 5 years, I was thrown into the whole area of mental health. Not knowing much about it, but obviously, you know, working with Abby once she was diagnosed, and she was diagnosed with clinical depression. And by the way, not every child that dies by suicide is actually, given a label, and mm-hmm. that can be very, very difficult sometimes. But what I'm doing is knowing that I have a 15-year-old child who died by suicide, and we did not see all the warning signs. We did not know enough about suicide prevention, and I don't think we had the right help, and I don't think she was diagnosed properly. I have started a brand new not-for-profit organization called My Friend Abby, on a happier note. Mm-hmm. And it is all about mental health and wellness. It's very, very important. And the very first targeted audience that I wanted to talk to was the youth and young adults, because they are the ones that are taking action right now as we speak. They want to make a difference.
The suicide rates across the country, not just in our region, in Connecticut, though, the numbers are that it has doubled in the last short period of time. But the suicide rates for young people ages 10 to 24 are up. Why is that?
That is such a big question, Ron. And I am not a professional, so I don't have the exact answer, but I can tell you it's very complicated. And it's not just one thing. A lot of people automatically assume that a child was bullied or that it's social media. There's so many combined things that are going on, especially when you have mental illness. And, you know, about 80-something percent of young adults who die by suicide have an undiagnosed mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... there's a lot of assumptions out there with people who don't know enough about it, and we're trying so hard to get the word out that it's so important to talk about. It's so important to say suicide, to talk about suicide prevention.
A lot of people don't even like to use that word.
No, or the word mental.
Mental.
You know, and depending on how you were raised, depending on how you grew up, there's a lot of stigma attached to it, and you can't throw those words around loosely anymore. Because it's going on in many, many families.
You mentioned before that you and others, it appears, missed the warning signs. Are those the words that you use, the warning signs? What are the warning signs?
Well, I can look back in hindsight, and when you go over that list that the professionals give you, the warning signs, and there are so many, but not every child fits that bill. Mm. I can tell you that Abby was really, really good at hiding what was going on. When we first had her diagnosed, we went right in with medication and therapy, and you know, we were doing all the right things,
At what age was she diagnosed?
About 2 years before she died.
Okay.
Going into puberty, she dealt with a lot of migraines. As one of my friends said, it was kind of the perfect storm between ADHD, migraines, and struggling with clinical depression. But boy, did she know how to hide it, and none of those warning signs were there, and we were aware. So that's tough. And I also represent a group of parents who we've all gotten together, whether we liked it or not. It's the worst group that you ever want to belong to, but we're all parents who have had a child who's died by suicide. We talk about this stuff all the time, you know, and I feel like that's my best resource sometimes.
So I'm just to get together with those who understand. They're in the same group. I understand that completely. When she hid it, how did she hide it? Did she always smile? Was she happy? Yeah. Was she outgoing?
So Abby was very popular. She was high energy, compassionate, very, very compassionate, loving, loved to volunteer, always gravitated towards others who I think now she knew instinctively were struggling, and that kept her very busy, and she was good at avoiding her own issues. She had so many wonderful close friends, and what a lot of her friends could not see behind that wonderful smile that she had was that she was struggling with clinical depression. And she, you know, she chose to talk to some of her closest friends about her depression, and they were very aware, as I did. I spoke with some of my closer friends about it, but there was no fast track. There was no let's talk about this now. It's so important for all of us to talk about, you know, clinical depression and suicide prevention. So I don't know how to explain it. Some of the warning signs, for example, are you start giving away your possessions. You might write a note. You might tell one of your friends that you're actually, you know, outright thinking of taking your own life, and that friend is now responsible for that information.
That's a terrible burden for that friend trying to figure out what to do.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so she didn't do any of that. She did not do any of that, except I did find out afterwards a couple little bits and pieces that were kind of inklings. But there's, you know, 5 years ago, I was struggling with the, you know, her, like, do I want my daughter to be the quote unquote poster child for suicide? And back then, the pharmaceutical companies were showing commercials that were that person in bed with the cover over their head, that black cloud hanging over them. That's how they described depression. And I truly believe that Abby absolutely loved life. She loved life and she wanted to live. But at the same time, she was struggling with depression. And she was 15. So how do you deal with that?
It's tough enough being 15-year-old.
Right.
I mean, we've all been there and we've been through that spot. So it can be tough times and it could last for a number of years.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to understand. How do you figure out what's a normal reaction from a teenager, and then what is something that Abby was dealing with, and how do you differentiate?
It was very difficult. It was so difficult. We were such an open family. We were a loving, supportive family. We were so happy. We were busy, but we were happy. And being able to distinguish some of the behavior, she wasn't violent or destructive or vocal about how she was in pain and she was depressed, or she never talked about anything like that. Originally, with her original therapist, we went in and I was, you know, open to everything. She asked me to go into her therapy sessions quite a bit. It was quite shocking to hear the therapist say, Abby, do you have a plan? Do you have a plan to take your own life? So that was kind of an adjustment, but we talked about it very openly as a family once I kind of learned, you know, how to look for the signs. And but she, I think, was just I think the disease took over and she was just exhausted. And I know she said, I just want to be normal. When she said that, you know, it was the medications that she was taking and
the side effects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know that you want to be able to warn other parents, you know, how do you do this? How do you look for this in your child? Because those signs are not always as prevalent as some people will lead you to believe. I have lots and lots of ideas on how we can really work with our children, our young adults.
I'm going to look forward to hearing all of them. And I'm so grateful that you're actually going to stay with us through the entire program. We're going to bring in other guests in the next segment and then also in the C segment. And I believe you already know Valerie, who's going to be joining us in a few minutes from now. Before we break, I just have to ask you, and I only have about 30 seconds or so. When the therapist said, "Do you have a plan?" what was Abby's response?
No, that she was not suicidal. It wasn't as big as we thought it was. You know, she pretty much lied. She was so good. Her last therapist, 3 months before she died, said, "Abby, you're doing so great. I don't think we need to see each other anymore." And you know what? She agreed. And as a parent, I was kind of relieved. She wasn't diagnosed properly. We didn't see the right people. You know, that fast track in getting help is so, so difficult.
Gillian Anderson is with us. She's going to be with us the entire program. And we do have other guests joining us. And if you would like to join in the program today, email us. We're tfs@wshu.org. And on Facebook, you can find us at Full Story WSHU. And you could leave a comment. Or if you have a question there, please let us know. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. It's the Full Story on WSHU. And just in case you missed the beginning of the program, there was a Hearst, Connecticut media analysis a short time ago, and the analysis showed that the suicide rate among young people in Connecticut nearly doubled in a single year. And that's what we're talking about today. Gillian Anderson is with us, founder of My Friend Abby. Her daughter, Abby, committed suicide 5 years ago. Valerie LaPutra is joining us, statewide young adult program coordinator for NAMI Connecticut. NAMI stands for National Alliance on Mental Illness. Valerie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time. And Gillian is here, and she says hi.
And she said,
"Hi, Val."
And she says, "Valerie is wonderful." And Steve Simpson is also joining us. He's a former head of Together We Can Make It. It's a Nassau County-based support group. It's for troubled children, teens, young adults. Steve is also the author of the Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook. Steve, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Gillian, I just want to talk with you for another minute or two before we bring in the other guests. You said just 3 months before Abby committed suicide, her counselor at that time said, "You're doing so well. We don't need to see each other anymore." You must have strong feelings about, and I know so many mental health professionals myself, and I think they do an amazing job, but how can the system be improved?
You know, I knew what I knew at the time with Abby, and we went to several different therapists, and again, she asked me to go into many of her sessions, and when that therapist said that, I was relieved. I just thought, wow, school's almost over. She's doing much, much better. And this is what happens. When people make a decision to take their own life, they seem happier. They are doing better on the outside.
Is that because they made the decision at that point?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. It's a comfort to people sometimes to know that they've made that decision. And oh boy. You know, she had just finished up taking some math classes to get her grades back up. Because she was dealing with migraines, she missed a lot of school. We took her out of Spanish. So the academic part of it was being handled. But now I know that that was probably one of her biggest stressors. And she had anxiety as well that wasn't really known to me until after she died. But again, she was so good at covering it up. She took her own life the last day of school.
Mm.
And there was finals coming up the following week. And yeah.
You know, there are parents who are listening to this right now saying, my kid certainly to me appears to be okay and everything is fine. So if I'm a listener, if I'm a parent and I'm looking at my kid, what do I do? From everything that you're saying, the outward signs seem to be
right.
Okay.
Right. I think as a society, what we need to do right away is get rid of the word suicide as a taboo subject. It's not taboo. It's so important that, yes, it makes people uncomfortable, but as I said before, so can the word mental and mental illness. We need to talk about mental wellness, and every parent should be talking to their children about suicide. It's hard to it's hard to think about, but let me tell you something. I know parents whose children have taken their own lives at the age of 10, 11, 12, and that number is going higher in that age bracket. So it's so important. It's important that we listen as parents, not be judgmental. Parents, you know, you immediately want to solve the problem. You want to fix it and make it better. We need to obviously stay away from giving out too much advice to help solve their problems. We need to listen. And then you need to go with your gut. You need to go with your gut if you feel like there is something that is wrong. And then, you know, hopefully your child will open up. It's all about having a trusted adult. But, you know, the other thing is, and this is why I started MyFriendAbby.org, is that children will turn to their friends first. It doesn't matter how perfect your family is or how much of an open relationship you think you have with your child. If that person is in crisis, they're going to turn to a friend before they turn to family members.
So with that in mind, because it's so difficult for parents sometimes to talk to a teen, should a parent reach out to their son's or daughter's friends? I mean, it's difficult enough talking sometimes to your own kid. How do you reach out to someone else's kid and say, tell me about my son or daughter. Is everything okay?
Right, right. And of course, that friend might go right to their child and say, oh my gosh, your mom just called me. And, you know,
what's wrong with your mom? Why is she bothering me?
Right, right. Well, this is why My Friend Abby is such an important organization, because we need to build safety nets around this one child who we might know is in crisis or who is dealing with some kind of a mental health issue. That child is going to have a safety net. It doesn't have to be just parents. It could be other trusted adults. It could be friends. Those friends need to be able to look for the signs. And that friend needs to know. If you're armed with that information, if you get a call from a friend that says, I'm going to take my own life, I'm done, that friend needs to make sure that they go to a trusted adult, because that a lot of times that child will say, if you tell my parents, I am never going to be your friend again. So here's this poor child armed with all of this information. You know the next steps. We know whether you're in high school, middle school, college. What do you do if a friend comes to you and gives you this amazing, horrible information? You need to go to a trusted adult, and you need to know how to reach out for help. You need to know how to help that friend.
Gillian Anderson is going to be with us for the remainder of the program. She is the founder of My Friend Abby. Valerie Laputra is still with us. And Valerie, thank you and Steve for your patience as I spoke a little bit more with Gillian. Valerie, why are the suicide numbers up?
Well, I think it's important to recognize, too, that even though the numbers have increased in the last year, we have to look broadly across the years, too, that the numbers are relatively the same. But I think that a lot of the contributing factors, it's complicated, as Gillian had said. A lot of it is people are connecting more online. They don't have the same kind of connections that they used to, whether they were in church or in schools with their peer groups. And a lot of it is accessing online sources to find their community, but it still increases isolation. I think a lot of it also is the intergenerational trauma. A lot of young people are witnessing more violence and are experiencing more challenges at home and not being able to openly discuss what's going on in their lives. So needing to be able to connect more with the trusted adult and finding somebody who might not even be a parent or a teacher, but even someone who is a custodian or a coach, someone that they trust.
Steve, for many years, you worked with children, teens, young adults. What did you hear from them?
Well, a lot of them were saying...
I'm sorry, Valerie.
11 years old on.
Valerie, I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second. I was actually talking to Steve, and I'm sorry you didn't hear me.
Oh.
Steve, you can go first.
Sure, thank you. So as I said, I mean, I was suicidal myself, and I was 11 years old on. And so I have a different perspective that I was actually in the shoes of many of the individuals, young adults that I work with and that I write about. And, well, two things. To piggyback on what Gillian had said earlier is, I mean, I was always cracking jokes in school and you know, getting in trouble and so on. I always joke and say I was the opposite of an A student. I was a Z student, always in trouble, never trying to study. But my perspective is a little different than ones that I've worked with. Of course, as you've been discussing, a result of mental illness. But there's another whole group, and it could be even the majority, for all people know, of those suicides. It's from abuse at home. Now, for example, I speak to a lot of schools. I recently had a little chat off the record with one of the special ed people there. And so I said, how many kids in this class have ADD, they really have a diagnosis, and how many have a parent that's an alcoholic and they're just being abused at home or and the drama, and that's why they can't concentrate? And she said half, you know. So in my case, it was an alcoholic father, and he was both physically and verbally abusive. Now, I'm going to stress something. It was the verbal abuse that sparked my thoughts of suicide. It was the verbal abuse that made me a Z student back then. You know, I never tried to study because I just believed I was a failure because I heard that my whole life and always hearing hopelessness. And like many children of alcoholics, okay, and one out of every five children today in every classroom is a child of an alcoholic at this point. And that statistic, many of it just get told since we're young, this hopelessness and everything's our fault. And, you know, it's your fault your parents got divorced. It's your fault your parent drinks. And you carry this burden on you. And I also want to stress that, and I wrote about this, that I always say I didn't want to die. I just didn't want to live. And you might say, that's the same exact thing. It's not. I had no idea I was being dead. I was never dead before. I wasn't a theologian, so I couldn't tell you a religious answer. But I did know what it was like being alive. And being alive for me was constant pain, constant drama. Even though I was joking around all the time, okay, I was always dying inside and in pain. And this is important to hear, too. In my case and the many that I've dealt with over the years, if I knew back then things were going to get better, I would not have contemplated suicide. I honestly, at that point, thought in my head, it's never getting better. It's enough years of doing this. I can't do this another 11 years. And that was my thoughts back then. And again, that's what's in the mind of myself and many that will think, so what's in your mind? Why would you want to do that? It's because you honestly, honestly think and feel it's never going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And unfortunately, in abusive homes, okay, you're convinced that. Now again, I was listening intently to Jillian about what she went through, and people who deal with mental illness. If a child commits suicide, you usually will hear that when they interview the parents. You know, we went to different therapists. We tried our best, and you can see their agony. You can see how much they tried and the drama they went through. But when I hear a line that I call the infamous line, we don't know why they did it, that's when I pause and say, stop. No child gets up one morning and just out of nowhere says, I'm going to commit suicide today. It just doesn't work that way. It's from time, power, and time of hopelessness. And usually my answer then is, well, either yourself or your significant other is probably an abuser or an alcoholic. And that's something that, you know, you mentioned the word taboo before. That's another situation we have to look into, you know, as far as there. Now, I was, by the way, as far as reverse the situation, eventually I did up in foster care, and eventually, God bless my mom, she left my father, got her own place, went back with her, and I got into self-help groups. That was my whole thing then, because another reason why lots of kids become suicidal was they honestly, honestly think they are alone. I am the only one that has these problems, period. Once I got into self-help groups, I realized there's a bunch of kids saying they have the same problems. And I also kind of discovered I wasn't as dumb as I thought I was, learned how to study, and went from literally a Z student to a A student. I always laugh and said they put my picture up as student of the month for the entire grade. And I used to laugh and say that would be a dartboard in the teacher's faculty room only 2 years before. What was the difference? There was no magic. I could have done that any time in my life, but I truly believed I was dumb. I was nothing's going to work in my favor. And think about if anyone would feel that way, okay, why would they want to go on if they honestly think that they're a failure and that it's never going to get better?
Steve, I'm going to ask you to pause there for 1 second because I want to bring Valerie and Gillian into the conversation now, and I'm going to get back to you in just a short time. Valerie, one thing I want to clarify, because we were talking about the numbers before, is the problem nowadays getting worse historically speaking, or is it pretty much in line with what has taken place in the past?
Well, I think that the numbers are, I mean, we know that suicide is the second leading cause of death for young people. In Connecticut, we've seen a spike within the last year or so, but I've been looking at the data and working with the Connecticut Suicide Advisory Board, and we've been noticing that the trends are relatively the same. So that's where I wanted to clarify that the numbers seem to be around the same. It is increasing, but doubling or tripling, that could be many different causes, different reasons that I'm not sure of.
I think, Valerie, I read a lot of material, and what's shocking to me is the increase in the rate of suicide among 10 to 14-year-olds. Kids in this age group, they have the lower rates than other groups, but they've almost tripled between 2007 and 2017. And the other thing that I think is really important now is 5 years ago, I would never have known that this was a crisis or an epidemic, but these numbers are just so important, and they are, again, it's a 56% increase, again, from 2007 to 2017, in the number of suicides among people ages 10 to 24. 56%, that's a staggering number.
I know, but I sit here, and you don't want to put your finger on anything. Like you said, there are a number of different causes, and I think what happened between 2007 and 2017, the first thing that I think about is the explosion of the internet and the explosion of smartphones, and by that, social media. That's the one thing that seems to tie in perfectly with that time frame.
Anxiety is bigger than depression now, and I think that does tie in. But again, just getting back to my own situation, Abby was diagnosed with clinical depression. So that adds a whole nother layer. Again, I have a group of friends who do not think that their child necessarily had a mental illness, that they made more of an impulsive decision.
Which goes counter to what Steve was saying before.
Yes.
Steve, you were basically saying a kid just doesn't wake up one day and say, you know what, that's it for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And to both ends, what Jillian is saying, again, you know, mental illness has a stigma. I think a lot of parents unfortunately feel, well, if they're mentally ill, I did something wrong. So unfortunately, the denial factor kicks in, you know. And the worst thing a parent can do if a child is showing you the traits of depression is, well, they're just a teenager, you know, and that's what teenagers do. That's a real dangerous, you know, cover up real fast to that. And also another situation, going back to what I also said, for those that come from abusive homes, unfortunately, addictions have gone up tremendously in recent times. And when you have addictions going up, you have depression going up, and you have abuse going up. And yes, you have suicide increasing as well within those situations. And also what Jillian said, too, is, you know, I've heard many parents say this. They have a couple of kids, and they say, well, this one's always in trouble, so I got him therapy. You know, my daughter does great in grades, so I didn't really put her in therapy because I didn't think she needed it. That is the worst decision to make. They both lived in the same household with other trauma they live with. And I've always said to parents before, valedictorians have been suicidal.
Well, I think no one is immune. Absolutely no one is immune. It can happen in any family. And that's the group of people I really want to reach, or even adults. I had a counselor say to me the other day that there are kids now, and I think they're opening up more than ever, that kids are going to her as a counselor and saying, I really want help. I really want therapy. But my parents aren't interested. How do I get my parents involved in this?
Interesting. Yeah. So the kids are being proactive,
and the kids are
dragging the parents with them.
Exactly.
They're silly.
Yeah. Hey, Steve,
I have heard that as well.
Steve, I have to take a break in 30 seconds. Let me ask you real fast. You said part of the problem nowadays is a drug dependency. Are you talking about in terms of the opioid epidemic?
Well, the opioid, but even still alcoholism, that's still the most abused drug there is. And it's a depressant, don't forget that. The opioids, of course, have increased and exploded, okay? But don't neglect the other drugs. They still went on the rise as well.
Okay.
With them. They're kind of almost neglected. So it's a double, whether it's the parents doing the drugs, which causes depression in the child, or, of course, if the young people are involved in addictions themselves, most of these drugs are depressants. So if someone's involved with addictions, of course they're going to be depressed and, yes, think of suicide.
Steve, hold on 1 second. I have to take a break. Steve Simpson, former head of Together We Can Make It, Valerie LaPutra, statewide young adult program coordinator for NAMI Connecticut, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and Gillian Anderson, founder of My Friend Abby. They're going to be with us for the next 20 minutes or so. We're going to take one last break. We'll be right back. It's The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak speaking with Gillian Anderson, founder of My Friend Abby. I'm going to bring in all our other guests in just a few minutes. Gillian, first, before I forget, because I know we're going to get a number of emails and comments on Facebook. If someone wants to find out about your organization, what's the best way to do it?
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. So myfriendabby.org has a lot of information. Our mission is to empower young adults to actively create peer-to-peer connections through grants that improve mental and emotional health. Our tagline is inspiring a mental health revolution, one friend at a time.
Hmm.
So you can kind of see where we're going with this, right?
That.
We're going to be giving out grants. And I think this is what makes our organization so unique. We're going to be giving out grants to young adults who are creative in their communities and willing to take action and do something when it comes to the whole arena of mental health, mental illness, and suicide prevention.
So are these primarily aimed at youngsters in high school or the college years?
Even younger. Yes, absolutely. Middle school, high school, college. There are kids that are out there and want to make a difference, and it doesn't matter. It might even be a teacher who's in a middle school who wants to do something. So we're kind of looking for evidence-based types of ideas that come up. We have an amazing grants committee. We're just putting the finishing touches on the policy about giving out grants. And the other thing I want to mention is we also have a clinical advisory committee, and our head of the clinical advisory committee is Jessica Huffman, who is chair of the clinical advisory board, but she's from the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. I know you've heard of them before.
Yes,
because Mark Brackett runs the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. She leads Inspire Ed, which is a free resource for teens working together and doing some positive things in school. We are encouraging young adults to apply for grants who want to make a difference. So whether it's peer mentoring, or maybe they want to come up with a storytelling event or a concert or do something with gratitude. You know, music helps anxiety. Animals help with depression. So it's along those lines. And it's really getting kids to open up to other kids. It's making that connection. It's that connection so that we normalize this conversation about mental health.
So they can contact you and see if they qualify for a grant?
Absolutely. Our grant process is going to be fairly simple. None of us have a lot of time. And again, it could be teachers that apply, young adults, youth. It's really, really exciting. And we've already done some model events, by the way. And the feedback has been tremendous.
I want to bring in our other guests. Before I bring back in Valerie and Steve, I also want to welcome Keith Scott to the program. Keith is the director of education at the Safe Center, which houses the Nassau Child Advocate. Keith, how are you? Welcome back.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. You know, one thing that struck me about the conversation that we were just having was when Gillian was saying, and Valerie and Steve were joining in about that, is that there's so many youngsters nowadays who are actually being proactive, and they're saying, you know what, I think I need some help, some assistance at this point. Do you find that more and more?
Yeah, you know, society is shifting in some ways for the better, where these, you know, issues with mental health, issues with anxiety, issues with, you know, substance abuse or issues in the home, people are more willing to talk about that now. So we're finally getting to a point where we understand that, you know, we all have things in our past, we all have things going on at home, and it's okay to talk about it. People aren't feeling as, these issues are not as taboo anymore. It's starting to trend in the right direction.
Valerie, let me ask you a question, because I think this was something that troubled people in the past. If we did a program like this, we would hear the word contagion amongst teen suicides, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it, because if you do, it's going to possibly influence others to do the same. Is that a real fear?
I think that's a fear, but we know for a fact that being able to talk about it actually makes it an opportunity for more people to actually say, hey, I think I have a problem. So being able to talk about having thoughts about suicide or even experiencing mental health challenges actually breaks that stigma and makes it more acceptable and easier for people to get the help that they need.
Steve Simpson is still with us. He's the former head of Together We Can Make It, which is a Nassau County-based support group, and it helps troubled children, teens, young adults. And Steve, I also want to mention that you are, as you mentioned earlier in the program, you're a writer. You put out a book called The Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook. Is that correct?
Yes, and what I've done was different, because I know when I was younger and young people, it was very hard to get someone help, life-saving information, because they may not want it from you because they're in denial. So the Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook deals with not just suicide, but all the reasons that might lead up to it, being a child of an alcoholic, abuse, why they should report their abuse, bullying. I have that in there as well, living in dysfunctional homes. But the handbook is an insert in four of my young adult fiction novels. I have four fiction novels, Runaway, Child's Island, Who Am I and the World is Wrong. And the theory is that now if you hand the young person, why are you giving me that? Well, I know you love these science fiction stories. And they take the book. But now, you say, pray they read the whole thing. A lot of teachers, imagine teachers saying, raise your hand if you're suicidal, raise your hand if you're being abused, I have a book. But no one's going to raise their hand in that classroom. However, if the teacher or youth group leader hands out what they think of fiction books and read them, now it's a nice way of getting life-saving information to a young person without having a conflict. It would have worked with me, and I know a lot of people would work with them. So that's the theory with that. And by the way, to piggyback what some other people have just said too, it is more taught. I have to compliment the young adult celebrities now. Years ago, if someone was in a rehab or someone was depressed, they said they had the flu for 6 months. They would never come. The modern ones now, Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez, Sarah Hyland, Debbie Ryan, they're all coming out and putting on Instagram that they have depression problems, they have addiction problems. And that is very helpful for young people to realize that they really aren't the only ones.
Gillian?
I totally agree with that. As a matter of fact, I like to compare mental health with cancer. Mental health is not as objective as cancer. You can't see a mental illness, but you certainly get a diagnosis when you get cancer. I had breast cancer 2.5 years ago. And do you know, I got amazing attention. I went through the system. It was, I so admired the nurses and the professionals. And, at the time, it wasn't my thing. I'm like, yeah, this is okay. Yeah, I can get through this. I had a double mastectomy. I went through a lot. I went through chemo and everything. But at the end of the day, all I kept thinking was, there's not enough funding in mental health. There's plenty of pink ribbons in breast cancer. And again, not to offend anyone, but mental health is so, so important that we talk about it. You couldn't talk about breast cancer 50 years ago. People would say that she had a heart attack, not right. That she died from breast cancer. We need to normalize this conversation so that mental health and wellness is on the lips of everyone, starting at a very young age. We need to normalize this conversation. And I agree. I think that having celebrities speak out about it is important.
It's just the other month, October was Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I made the comment on the air at that time. I said 20 years ago, we probably couldn't have done that show because you couldn't say breast cancer awareness on the
air. That's right.
Times are changing, but sometimes it's a little slow for us, isn't it? It's the progress there. Keith, I need to ask you this question. I was at a college orientation recently for freshmen, and one of the comments was made by a mental health professional who addressed the parents. The kids weren't there, but the parents were there, and they said that one-third, and I believe the number was one-third of all the kids who are freshmen in colleges nowadays across the United States will go for mental health counseling at some point, whether freshman year, sophomore year, whatever. And I am telling you, you could have heard a pin drop in the room, because it's what Gillian and I were talking about before. Many times parents will simply say, not my kid, everything is fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a alarming, surprising number, but you know what? That's alarming in a good way, where if people are suffering, they're no longer suffering in silence. We do know that, you know, 1 in 4 Americans at some point in their life will be impacted by some form of mental illness, some form of, you know, mental disability, whether that's through a parent or through themselves suffering it. But once again, you know, the movements going forwards, we're getting more people into treatment. We're getting more people to talk about this. And to your point earlier about people saying this is it's contagious to talk about these things, you know, like substance abuse, that when people weren't talking about it, more people were suffering, and they're suffering in silence. Now, even with breast cancer, people aren't talking about it, but people are still being diagnosed with breast cancer. Same with domestic violence. If we don't talk about it, these issues are still there. And the way to eradicate or deal with these issues is to bring them to light, and more people will then seek services.
Valerie, what should the state of Connecticut be doing nowadays in terms of trying to help the situation? We know what groups like my friend Abby does. We know what other groups and organizations do. What should the state be doing?
I think that it's important that we are training people in evidence-based approaches and intervention programs. Everybody needs to get trained, because we need to create a suicide-safer community, whether it's the person down the street, it could be a professional, it could be a parent, a young person. They all need to be trained to recognize the signs and know how to be able to just talk about mental health and suicide, so that way we can normalize the conversation. And also being able to increase our funding. The state of Connecticut really would benefit from being able to access more resources to continue the funding, so our communities will be able to continue to teach programs about mental health awareness and suicide prevention.
We have about 7 minutes left in the program, so I'm going to ask that we spend the remaining 7 minutes maybe clarifying some of the signs and for the information for those who are listening right now, because I have a feeling that if some parents are listening, they might be a bit concerned or a bit confused. So, Gillian, I'd love to start with you.
Sure.
If I'm a parent and I'm listening to the program today and I'm maybe a bit concerned about my son or daughter, or maybe someone else's son or daughter, what should I be looking for? What should I be thinking of? What should my plan of action be?
Right. I say do your homework, do your research, definitely listen to your gut if you have, if you're concerned about your child. A couple of things I want to mention really quickly is, and this is available to anyone, but we do need to all know the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. It's 1-800-237-TALK. It's available 24/7. It's free and confidential support for people in distress. It's a good resource. And also there's a crisis text line. You can text HOME, H-O-M-E, to 741-741. Again, it's free. It's out there. You can also call 911 if you have a crisis situation. It's so important for parents to know that opening that dialogue is critical. And again, looking for the signs, is that child sleeping properly? And again, these could be normal teenage behavior type things, but if they start adding up, you know, is your child sleeping properly? Are they using more drugs and alcohol? Are they, skipping school? Again, kind of normal teenage stuff. But if it starts adding up, use your gut. And also, even past that, is what I think is very, very important, is once you maybe get a diagnosis or you're even still not sure, make sure you keep your kids safe by obviously opening up about suicide prevention. Have that conversation. Mm-hmm. Learn how to have the conversation. There's all kinds of ways you can find out. But also, and my friends remind me of this, remove any lethal means from the home. Don't be hesitant to call 911. Know the crisis text line and the suicide prevention hotline. And tell your kids what to do if their friends are armed all of a sudden with information about wanting to hurt themselves. You open up to a trusted adult. And as a parent, it's so, so important that you understand that you think you know your child, you think you know everything that's going on with them. But again, a child is more likely to turn to a friend if they're in crisis before anything else.
Keith, Scott, what should parents watch out for?
Well, everything that was just mentioned, you know, it's really important to out for those changes in the child's behavior. You know, as was mentioned, if they're, you know, isolating more or if they're using substances to cope, you know, it's normal for kids to, you know, sway a little bit away from their normal behavior. But when it starts going on either side, either too much or too little, if they're, you know, going over the top and trying to use substances, or if they're, you know, isolating and not talking to anyone whatsoever, those are really deep concerns. It's important that parents have open dialogues with their children, talk about, you know, the prevalence of suicide, talk about the prevalence of anxiety. If the child's growing up in a household where, you know, alcoholism or substance use is prevalent, or if they have that genetic predisposition where their grandparents may have been, you know, addicted to substances, it's important parents sit down and talk with the children, let them know that they may be more prone to addiction or certain mental illnesses. So the best thing parents can do is have an open dialogue and be that open place for support for their children.
Valerie, it seems from everything that everyone is saying that one of the most important aspects of all this is just talk, talk, talk.
Yes, and also being able to have the conversation in an open way. So if the child is saying that they're thinking about it, that they're not in trouble for speaking up and saying that they're thinking about suicide. And being able to have that open and honest conversation about creating a plan so that they can get put in a safe place and receive the treatment that they need.
And I think listening more than anything is critical. Listening, and also, as Valerie's just saying,
instead of just talking,
it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to not be okay. Huh. And listening, and also language is very important. Language really matters. You have to, you know, especially anybody that's been affected. But for example, I just want to really quickly bring up this point, but we don't say committed suicide anymore. We want to say that that person or that child died by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is, you know, it's got a lot to do with journalistic integrity as well as we work with the media. Things can be triggering, and we have to be very, very careful about looking out for those who are possibly in crisis.
Steve Simpson, yes.
Also, what they said, remember, some homes, if there's dysfunction, you may not have a parent that willing to listen because they're dealing with their own addictions and so on. So if a young person's listening to this, or someone wants to help a friend in school, if you're still in school, the school social worker or school counselor is the first place you should go to. And if you have a friend that has these problems, like you said, they've come to you, take them by the hands. I'll go with you to the school social worker. That's a fantastic technique. I'll go with you to a 12-step meeting if the person also has addictions that are suicidal. Because remember, we're relying on the fact that it's the functional both parents. That may not be the fact all the time. And you said earlier, they don't always go to the parents to begin with. So if your parent, of course, like everybody says, not just the isolation, the lack of interest in things they might be interested in. But again, if it's a young person, go with them there. Go with them. Local churches have outreach programs and so on. There is, again, the 1-800-273-TALK is the suicide prevention number. But just keep that in mind, too, that a lot of young people, what we don't talk about it is they will, unfortunately, become suicidal because there is no one at home to help them. Both parents could be alcoholics. It's extremely common. So, again, that's where the school social becomes a primary source. So I would recommend, or if you have a niece or nephew, you know, that's, I've heard many times parents, someone say, I don't want to get my brother in trouble. And they literally don't help out their niece or nephew. You have to make the child the priority and get them to help. But also, with them at first is tremendous.
Steve, I got to hold you there. I want to thank you. Steve Simpson is the former head of Together We Can Make It, Nassau County-based support group. Keith Scott, Director of Education. Keith Scott, Director of Education at the SAFE Center, which houses the Nassau Child Advocate. Valerie LaPutra, Statewide Young Adult Program Coordinator, NAMI, Connecticut, National Alliance on Mental Illness. And, of course, Gillian Anderson in the studio with us, the founder of My Friend Abby. Thank you all. It was a wonderful discussion.
Thank you.
Once again, myfriendabby.org is how you could reach them. And if you want to comment on today's program, email us, tfs@wshu.org. Facebook, find us at Full Story WSHU. And also, once again, National Suicide Prevention Hotline number 1-800-237-TALK. It's going to do it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Franks, the digital editor. Our associate producers, Fadu Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas, J.D. Allen is the producer. Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of the Full Story.